for or against this man, who says that if he could, he would likely run this time against Bobby Jindal. Are you surprised there are so few people lining up to run against him?
In a way, yes, in a way, not. Things are really tough in politics now. And the situation, financial situation of the state is in such a debacle that one has to think twice before he wants to bring upon himself the task of cleaning up the mess that the general people have caused. I mean, somebody's got to find a way to take care of $1.5 billion deficit and also to continue programs for education and for the health care of our senior citizens and those who are unable to care for themselves, all of whom have been seriously impacted adversely by the policies of the present administration.
Now, we did have a listener note when you were stating that Governor Jindal has moved around quite a bit. Well, when you were a young man, you moved from, what, the city council to the Louisiana Senate to Congress to governor. That's part of the process, isn't it?
It is if you do your job and you complete your term. I spent 8 years in the city council, and I did not run for re-election because I knew I was going to run for the Senate. I then ran for the Senate a year later. I was no longer in office. I had already refused to run for a third term. And I spent 2 years in the state Senate. But when our congressman was killed, it opened an opportunity for me to then move to Congress, which I accepted that. And when I was elected governor, I spent the whole 4 years of each term in the governor's office. And while I did travel, it was not nearly as extensive, and it was certainly not at times when the state needed me. I never left the state within a huge deficits and great problems that the present governor has. You know, it's been a curiosity to me why people in California and Minnesota and Florida and all these places where he goes, why would they be so interested in who's the governor of Louisiana? In 16 years, I never experienced that. So, well, hooray for him.
Well, you, I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I think your ultimate goal was always to be governor of Louisiana. You might have thought about running for president, but you never really put the apparatus in place to do it. You were always running for governor. From 1971 to 1991, you really were running for governor.
Well, you might say all my adult life I was running for governor, because even when I went to Congress, I knew that when John McKithen got out of office after his second term, that there would be an open field. And as a matter of fact, 21 people qualified and ran. And I ended up winning out of that group. You know, people like to talk about, well, he only beat this person, he only beat that person, like in the last election. Say, I only beat David Duke. Well, Governor Romo was an incumbent governor sitting in the mansion, and he didn't even make the runoff. There was a mayor of a nice city, two mayors, as a matter of fact. There was a former member of the Public Service Commission. All of us, there were eight of us in the race, and Duke was not the only significant personality that I beat. There were six others.
You beat him in a runoff and beat him handily, 61-39%, David Duke. You were on the ballot in your career how many times?
26.
26. And you ran first in primaries?
In all but the 1987 debacle, where Governor Romo succeeded in convincing the editorial writers and newspaper owners that he was going to brick up three floors of the education building, which he never did. And he was going to kill whatever plans there were to have brain gambling to the state. Although the lottery, riverboat gaming, and video poker all came to fruition while Buddy Romo was governor. Mm-hmm. Many people think of me as being the governor who brought gambling to the state, but horse racing was here before I was born, and Governor Romo presided over three aspects of the gaming. The only one that I'm responsible for is the casino in New Orleans.
1987, October, the Monteleone Hotel, the site of your greatest triumphs. In fact, your bride is with you.
That was my greatest triumph.
I would agree. But In October of 1987, you suffered your only defeat, the only time in your career you did not run first. Kevin, let's go to 1987. Edwin Edwards, Buddy Romer, the election returns come in. Romer's at 33%. Edwards is at 28%. He's second. Third place is Bob Livingston. Fourth is Billy Tozan. Fifth is Jim Brown, an all-star field of candidates. And Edwin Edwards, rather than go to a runoff with Buddy Romer, he comes out at about 2 o'clock in the morning and makes this announcement.
Under the circumstances, since I did not run first, that it would be inappropriate for me to continue this election. Please hear me out. Please hear me out. I have to do what I think is best for my state. I don't want it further divided. There's never been a time in modern history when the combined efforts of the media has been so bent and dedicated on taking over the governor's office.
Now, did you know on that night that you'd be running 4 years later?
Oh, sure, I said it. You know, I was aware of what Romer had done to convince those newspapers about what he was going to do, which I knew was impossible and really not in his heart. And as a matter of fact, he didn't make any effort at all to do any of the things that he promised and said he was going to run on. And in spite of making the biggest issue of the campaign, my plans to bring gambling to the state, he presided over the greatest expansion of gambling in the history of Louisiana. And I knew that was going to happen, and because I could see that gambling was going to be a source of revenue and employment for every area that saw the wisdom of doing that. Now, look, I'm not advocating gambling. I gamble, haven't done it in 10 years, however. But it's not a good practice, and I would urge anybody not to do it. On the other hand, 84% of the people of this country gamble from time to time, and if you don't believe it, you travel around the country and listen to people. I saw in 1983, when no one else did, that Indian casinos were coming. They laughed at that. But now there are 453 Indian casinos in this country. I saw that there was going to be a proliferation of gambling, even though only Nevada and New Jersey had any form of gambling except horse racing at that time. Now only two states, Utah and Hawaii, don't have gambling. The rest of the states saw that as an opportunity to raise funds. Now, let me say this. Everybody laughs, scoffed, and criticized me for saying that, but I saw what was coming, and in fact, it has come. It brought even the limited gaming we have in Louisiana, brings over $600 million a year in taxes and provides jobs for over 50,000 people. Now, let me say this point. Practically every major candidate for any major office in this state since that time has run on a platform of being against gambling, horrible practice, shouldn't be permitted. Yet there's more gambling in Louisiana today than there was the day I left office, and not one of them made any serious effort to stop the practice. You know why? Because it is practical. And because they can't replace the $600 million in taxes, nor the 50,000 jobs that the industry creates in this state. But I was the only one who was brave enough or foolish enough, depending upon your view, to say we need that for the economy of our state. And in fact, we do. It's an industry. It brings tourism here. It provides jobs for people in all walks of life. And it's, in my opinion, a practice that's going to stay here for the foreseeable future. Now, if ever we get to where we have tax revenue or income from other sources that we don't need it, then I would have no problem with removing it.
Okay.
But as long as it is needed for jobs and for the tax revenue, it's just going to have to stay here as a matter of practice.
Bill downtown, Governor, wants to know what you think of Buddy Romer's quest for the presidency.
Well, what quest?
He's running.
Except for his early statement that he was thinking about running, I haven't heard anything about it. I don't know. It'd be good for Louisiana if he got elected. But on what basis? How is he going to go to other states and talk about what a successful governor he was when he couldn't even make the runoff in his first election and lost two times since? Anybody, it seems to me, running for president should have a record to run on. And I don't know, you know, he's a strange fella. I heard him make a speech in Iowa in which he talked about he was a pro-life governor. He didn't tell him about the pro-life bill that he vetoed while he was governor.
But he vetoed two bills that, of course, became an issue when he ran against you in 1991.
Well, I think those kind of things are going to catch up with him. If ever he gets to where he's a serious candidate, mm-hmm. They'll start looking at his record, and mm-hmm. it doesn't stand the light of day.
Now, I mentioned that your spirit is still vibrant, and that's apparent, and you kept your wits and your spirit while you were incarcerated. Are you a spiritual man?
Not in the sense that people think of it. I'm not the kind of person, and I say this, and I know it's gonna pick some ears. I'm not the kind of person who think there's an entity out there that is interested in whether or not the next roll of the dice is going to come up good, or whether or not my team is going to win a football game, or whether the stock market is going to go up or down. I don't think that there's an entity that micromanages people's lives. Now, if you have faith, that's fine. But I don't think that one should rely upon some magical power to solve their problems. Let me tell you something. If prayer healed people, 265 popes that have died in the history of our world would not have died, because every time one got sick, thousands of people were praying for them. And look, I'm sorry. I wish that they had not died, but they did die. And it didn't matter how many people were praying for them not to die. Faith is a wonderful thing, but it has to be based on reason. You can have all the faith you want, but you jump off of a building, you're going to die. Nothing's going to stop you in midair. Mm-hmm.
Do you recall the last time you prayed?
Yes, this morning.
Okay.
I prayed that you wouldn't give me a hard time, and my prayers are not being answered.
Well, in 1984, you were very candid, maybe too candid, certainly for a politician. You gave your reflections on what you thought happened when Jesus died. And you recall that gave you a lot of grief. Do you remember what you said?
Yes, I said that it's unrealistic, except by faith, to think of a being dying and coming back to life. I don't know if it happened or not. I couldn't tell you. I don't know of any real historical, now a lot of people take issue with this, I don't know of any real historical facts outside the New Testament, which, by the way, I have read on a number of occasions. Every word in the New Testament, not the whole Bible, but every word in the New Testament has been touched by this finger. Because I grew up in a very religious environment, and I was at one time very, very religious in the sense that people think of religion now. I think I'm more practical now.
You were an ordained minister, right?
Not ordained. I was a lay minister when I was a young man and conducted youth services. I also, strangest, most unbelievable fact of my life is that I once was the song leader in the Nazarene Church in Marksville. Testimony to the forgiveness of people in church.
Do you believe in a heaven?
Not in the sense that most people do.
So when Edwin Edwards passes away, which will probably be long after I'm gone, what happens? Where will you go?
I don't think I'll go anywhere except to the grave. I want to say this. I have no fear at all of dying. I really don't. I don't want to stop living, because I enjoy life, and life has been sweet and precious and good to me. And now more than ever, I have something to live for. She's sitting here on my right. And my children and grandchildren and seven great-grandchildren that I have. It's a precious country to live in, a precious way of life. And I have every desire to remain living because of what it does for me and the joy that I get out of living. But I'm not afraid of dying at all. I am absolutely convinced, in spite of what some people think of me, that I have done nothing in my life that justifies an eternal hell.
Do you have regrets?
Do I have a what?
Regrets about any action?
Of course I have regrets. I came on this show.
297-5633 for Edwin Edwards. I'm passing along some inquiries from listeners. Joseph wants to know what you think your legacy will be.
It's in the book.
And the book is Edwin Edwards, Governor of Louisiana.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know we were on the air.
Yes.
You see, I finally made a mistake. My legacy, it'll be mixed. Many people will say that I served well and didn't deserve what ultimately happened to me. Others will say that I should have never been elected. And there are probably a third of the people of the state who blame me for everything that's happened in Louisiana. I would remind them that in the past years, Treen, Roma, Blanco, Foster, and Jindal have served far more time combined than I have in the 16 years I was governor. So to the extent that you think things are bad in this state, you might consider balancing the blame between me and those other people who served as governor. On the other hand, except at one time in 1987, and that was because I was put unnecessarily on two trials, which took me away from my office for a year. Except for that one time, I always ran ahead of everybody else, and I was in 26 different elections between general elections and primaries. So I must have done something right. And I can say this based upon polls and my own awareness, at least 40% of the people of this state will always vote for me for any office that I run for. At least 30% will vote against me for any office I run for. And between those two extremes are people who move from left to right or up or down, depending upon the circumstances and who the other candidates are. But I'm the only person who ever got over 1 million votes, and I've done that twice running for governor. I have 3 times gotten over 60% of the vote in early elections, and my legacy is simply this. Look at the record. I left this state in a good financial position. You think back at the times that I was governor, people were working. Teachers were paid, civil servants were paid, and things went well. And
so
I'm satisfied, and I think some people are.
We'll be back after this 1 minute timeout.